How does Christianity compare with Islam, Mormonism, skepticism, Buddhism, Scientology, Jehovah's Witnesses, and other world religions? You'll find answers in the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for January, The Christian Difference. It's published by Concordia Publishing House. Their phone number, 1-800-325-3040. Or learn more about The Christian Difference at issuesetc.org. The Issues Etc. Book of the Month for January, The Christian Difference. It's not like you can ever really win when a strange way of thinking takes over, when we start assigning rights to non-persons. Rivers have rights. Do plants have rights? I like a good salad. I do. I don't have any qualms of conscience about eating a hot dog, which has all kinds of animals mixed into it. But should I have qualms of conscience about eating that salad, since some are saying that plants have rights? Sounds like just crazy talk. Is it more than that? Is there something behind it? Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're going to be talking about that issue, do plants have rights, and the Affordable Health Care Act and transgender discrimination. Wesley Smith joins us. He's senior fellow at the Discovery Institute Center on Human Exceptionalism, author of several books, including Culture of Death, The Age of Due Harm Medicine, and author of a recent column, one for National Review Online, titled Another Push for Plant Rights and Healthcare Dragooned to Effect Social Change. Wesley, welcome back.
Hey, Todd. Happy New Year.
And to you as well. You have written recently of your concern about those who are asserting that plants have rights. How would you respond to someone who says this is just more crazy talk from kind of the lunatic fringe?
Yeah, well, you know, we've been hearing people saying, oh, it'll never happen here. That's just crazy talk from the lunatic fringe for the last 50 years. And quite a bit of that crazy talk is now public policy.
What have we heard lately on the issue of plants having rights?
Well, you've had some people, including writing in the New York Times, basically saying that because plants, they're sophisticated organisms. In fact, some would say that they're proof that just mere evolution isn't necessarily so. But so plants have chemical reactions to certain things. So as we all know, a plant will appear to be stretching toward the sun, right? That's not a volitional act. That's based on chemical interactions that occur within the plant itself. There are other chemical interactions that plants engage in at the root level and in other levels. There's even a potential that these chemical interactions can communicate with other like plants, and it can affect how that plant then, I mean, you can't say behaves, but what happens with the plant in terms of its growth and so forth. So some people are saying that because plants are so sophisticated, which such sophisticated organisms and complicated, complex organisms, which they are, as are most life forms on the planet, except for the simplest. Even a one-celled organism is incredibly sophisticated when you think about what occurs in that cell, that we should perhaps start thinking of them as a who instead of a what. And the latest example of this is a woman who wrote a book from Australia about this, and she was quoted in the Sydney Morning Herald saying that if plants are, quote, beings, then maybe they have rights, definitely the right to be treated with respect and care. All right, close quote. Well, that would never happen. Well, except it already has happened, Todd. Switzerland has put in its constitution the right to dignity for plants, meaning that plants are to be given individual, not, we're not talking about ecosystems, we're talking about plants. Each plant is to have be ascribed dignity. And when they passed this thing, because it's all anti-human exceptionalism, they didn't know why plants should be given dignity. So they appointed a big brain bioethics commission to tell them why. And what that commission determined was that it is unethical to quote, this is their word, decapitate, close quote, a wildflower. And they said that the reason why plants have dignity, one of the reasons, Some said that plants strive for something, and that just made my head explode because, of course, plants don't strive for anything. That would take volitional thought. Plants do not have volitional thought. The other reason they said is that since human beings and plants share much material at the molecular level, then we should consider that plants are part of the moral community. That was how they wrote about it. And you might say, well, okay, it's in the Constitution of Switzerland, and a big bioethics commission said that plants are people too because, you know, plants are made of carbon, we're made of carbon, so they're part of the moral community. That doesn't mean anything. Well, the Wall Street Journal a few years ago had an article in which a botanist was trying to create, through genetic GMOs, genetically modify wheat, so that it would be resistant to fungus. Now, that could be really important because that could help hungry humanity. If you had wheat that could resist fungus and be stored longer or thrive hardier when it's growing, that could be of tremendous benefit. Well, they wouldn't give him the money until he said it could be good for the plants, which is just ludicrous. And then to tie it all in a big bow, when he finally got the money and he was growing this experimental crop, the GMO radicals, anti-GMO radicals, came in and tore it all up because goodness knows, Todd, we wouldn't want starving humanity to have more food.
That was kind of my bottom line question, is what are we supposed to eat if plants have rights, or do we kind of get into a hierarchy of rights? Do I go out to the wheat field and do I ask for volunteers to make bread?
The interesting thing is, it isn't just right to plants, it's nature rights. I mean, we've talked about that on your show before, where more than 30 municipalities in the United States have declared the rights of nature, which means that nature, broadly looked at, must be given equal consideration to people when there are things that people want to do. And I suppose one would say, well, the need for us to eat outweighs the right of the plants to life, or whatever it might be. But I want people to understand, based on your as we said in your first question, you're talking logic here. This is not a logical movement, this nature rights movement, the idea that everything has rights, basically, is what we're hearing. It's an anti-human movement. And the purpose of this is to impede human thriving, and it's a deeply misanthropic and nihilistic movement. So, for example, with regard to nature rights, Santa Monica is one of the cities that has declared the rights of nature. Well, I grew up in Los Angeles. I know Santa Monica like the back of my hand. There's no nature left in Santa Monica, trust me. It's completely developed with very expensive homes, but there's a pier there that has a roller coaster. Most of the native flora has been replaced. There's still, of course, some fauna, but a lot of the fauna has, there aren't any more wolves there that there might have been at one time in the world, or mountain lions and things of that sort. There's no nature left in Santa Monica, so why would the city pass such an ordinance? Because it is an ideological statement that we should look at human beings as just another animal in the forest. And the idea is, well, if we do that, then we'll tread more lightly on the earth, which I reject, because if we just think of ourselves as animals, that's how we're going to act. We're going to act only in furtherance of our instinct, our desire of the moment, our impulses, rather than as human beings with duties and obligations and rationality. And all of this is anti all of that. This is all anti-humanism writ large.
You have also written recently about the so-called Obamacare, the Affordable Health Care Act, and the possible way it could be used to, you say, dragooned to affect social change. What do you mean by that?
Well, in fact, that's how it was tried to be used. You may recall, after the Affordable Care Act passed, that the HHS under Obama passed some very stiff regulations requiring religious organizations that disagreed, just for example, with contraception, to actually pay for it, including the Sisters of the Poor, nuns. They were required to provide contraception through their health insurance. Places like Hobby Lobby, the company that the owners, it's a closely held co- corporate company, and the owners believed that covering the morning after pill was against their religion because it would terminate the life of an early embryo, which they considered an abortifacient. So the religious exemption that the Obama administration provided in the regulation was extremely narrow and very difficult. And when the lawsuits took off, I wrote about this, I reported on it, the Attorney General's office would write legal briefs saying that the reason you have to have the contraception mandate, even for religious organizations and businesses that might oppose those regulations on the basis of their religious beliefs, was the equality of women. Well, the equality of women has nothing to do with a law that supposedly is to make sure that every American has access to health insurance. So this law was dragooned, and I used the active verb very intentionally. It was dragged into service for the purpose of promoting certain social agenda items that particularly the left wing of the Democrat Party or the left wing outside the Democratic Party believe in. One of them being stifling freedom of religion in the marketplace, the contraception idea that all women should have access to free contraception. That's a social agenda item as much as it is a medical item. And also a rule that required that you could not discriminate based on gender identification. Well, the idea behind that was to force all insurance companies to pay for sex change surgeries and so forth. And as I pointed out, that rule could be used to punish doctors who say, wait, for let's say a child presents to a doctor who's been diagnosed with gender dysphoria. Right now, just over the last few years, suddenly doctors are expected to stop the normal puberty of such children so that when they get older, they will not have developed secondary sex characteristics. Well, what if the doctor thinks that's too harmful to the child to interfere with normal puberty? And that doesn't even require religious belief. Well, under the rule, that doctor could perhaps be charged with discrimination because that was the point of the rule. The point of the rule was to make sure that certain which were not until just very recently were considered incredibly radical ideas, became part of the public policy. But it wasn't done through the front door, basically dealing with these particular issues as a legislative matter. It was done through the back door by taking the mandate for health insurance and the power of Health and Human Services to write regulations around that mandate, to write a regulation that then forces the law to change in ways that the people's representatives never directly dealt with. The reason I wrote this piece is the Trump administration has announced a proposed rule that would define gender to be biologically based, meaning, you know, you're born a male or a female. And the New England Journal of Medicine had two gay rights activists who are not MDs and are not scientists write an article for the New England Journal of Medicine decrying this as promoting discrimination. Well, that's not what the Affordable Care Act is supposed to be about. The Affordable Care Act is supposed to be about making sure people have access to health insurance so they can get quality medical treatment. It isn't supposed to be about ending discrimination. So that's what I meant. You take a law that is intended to do one thing, whether one agrees or disagrees with the way it was done, and then you use it to further agenda items that were never part of the law when it was passed.
With about a minute here, Wesley, you mentioned there that this is not something that would necessarily even be harmful to religious belief or religious freedom. This could just be a doctor who says, I don't want to do this because it's going to harm this person.
Exactly. There are a lot of, for example, and we see the same thing with this is the medical conscience issue, euthanasia and abortion and so forth. There are a lot of people who oppose engaging in those practices themselves based on a Hippocratic oath approach to medicine and practicing medicine. That is, do no harm. Well, to say that for a doctor to say, I think it is harmful to stop normal puberty, or I think it is harmful to take off healthy organs because of a person's interior life about how what they believe that their true identity is, does not require a religious belief. To say, I do not believe that I should be killing patients in euthanasia or assisting their suicide, does not obviously require a religious belief. The same thing about abortion. And so this medical conscience issue, which is going to be boiling, and perhaps we could talk at greater length another time about it, is bubbling and boiling, and I think it's going to be one of the hottest ones in the next 10 years, because you have those forces using healthcare to push social and cultural agendas, coming up against doctors and nurses and pharmacists who actually got into those healing professions along the tradition and believe in the traditional idea of doctors as healers and not in harming patients in terms of their physical bodies. And it's going to be, I think, a very, very big religious freedom and conscience protection issue going forward.
Wesley Smith is senior fellow at the Discovery Institute Center on Human Exceptionalism, author of several books, including Culture of Death, The Age of Do Harm Medicine, and author of recent columns for National Review Online titled Another Push for Plant Rights and Healthcare Dragooned to Affect Social Change. You can read his columns at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Wesley, thank you.
Thank you very much, and Happy New Year to your listeners.
In hour two of Issues Etc., we're going to take up a conversation of mortification. That sounds rather depressing and morose, putting to death. But Scripture calls the Christian to a life of mortification. We'll talk about mortification in the Christian's life with Pastor Brian Wolfmiller. Stay tuned.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues Etc., P.O. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.